Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. How you doing this week?
I'm good. How are you?
It's been a long one.
It has for me too, but not as bad as yours, so.
Guys, without going into so much detail, I like slipped on the ice. My doggy went to doggy vet, ER. I had my COVID vaccine. It's just been one thing after another.
And you got slammed with snow?
We got slammed with snow, and we are again today.
Oh, that's fun.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't do the shoveling, so it's going to be okay.
There you go. That's what matters.
But I'm really excited because talking true crime is like my... It sounds so crazy when I say it out loud. It's like my relaxing... Me time.
Okay, can I say something to you? And I'm mad at you, actually, because of your week, I'm not going to even get into you. I texted Amy, like, 4 days ago. And I'm going to say it again because I have no problem suggesting other podcasts. Bob Ruff, Truth and Justice. Hold on, let me pull the actual episode up. His season 20... Or season 9, episode 20.
Oh my goodness.
Season 9, episode 20 is a breakdown of all of his opinions on the Delphi case. For those of you that are Patreon, you know we covered it as our first case because it's my, like, this has to get solved case. Amy, I need you to listen to it so I can call you and discuss this theory.
I know. And if you're not familiar with this case, all I'll say is there's so much videotape, and I think that's why.
He talks about it. I don't want to, we have to stop talking about it now because I want to dive in and it's not the case we're talking about. But can you please go listen because I need to call you and talk about this.
All right, Bob Ruff, it is.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. And if for all you guys, go listen and then tell us what you think of what his thoughts are.
Sounds good.
All right, so, you can go.
The case. Thank you. The case I'm going to talk about is a little bit different. Now, we're walking a fine line of this case even fitting into our, I don't know what you'd call it, model of being able to talk theories and things like that. But it does. And it was requested quite a bit, particularly Wendy, Mindy, and Christina all requested this case. And I started to look into it, and it was an article I first started to read, and I'm halfway through it, and I go, it's so obvious who did this. It's so obvious. And I almost put it down, but I kept going because it was suggested, and I know it is for a reason. And I was like, oh, it is not how it appears at all. That's one thing. So the other thing about this case is that today this person would be 109, so... regardless of whatever happened, which I'm not going to tell you immediately, she would be deceased. So we're covering someone that is almost 100% deceased, but we don't know what happened to her exactly. So I'm going to tell you about
it. Okay.
Walking that fine line here, all right?
All right. I like it.
The case that I'm going to cover today is the case of Helen Brock. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and then I'm going to tell you why this case probably got some celebrity traction. So Helen Brock, born Helen Voorhees, was born in Ohio on November 10th of 1911. Yep, it's an old case just for me. She would be 109 today, like I said. Not a lot is known or written about Helen's early life, other than right out of high school, she ended up marrying her high school sweetheart, and they were together a few years before they divorced. Helen went on her merry way, and she worked and took care of herself, and she actually worked at a country club, and this is where she met Frank. Frank was considerably older than her. He was established, he was successful, and he owned Brock's, a candy company. Now, if this doesn't sound familiar, a simple Google and a picture of their logo might ring a bell. So they do a lot of candy. It's not chocolate or anything like that, to my knowledge, but it's the kind of candy you're going to find in Grandma's candy dish. It's pretty much anywhere that you can find candy.
Don't they make the Conversation Hearts?
I actually think exactly that's who it is.
That's how I know what the candy company is.
And although the candy company has been sold and stuff, it is still around today after, I believe, it was, quote unquote, born in like 1904. So over 100-year history here.
So you should have released this next Sunday on Valentine's Day for the candy hearts. I'm just saying.
If I was a little more thoughtful, I would have. But I'll tell you, I will tell you another reason why maybe you're right about that date.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
So Frank was the heir to the Brock Company, and he actually ended up selling the company, and he sold it for what today would be probably a little bit over $1 billion. And he took that money, and he retired with his wife. So he lived a good life. And like I said, he was considerably older than her in her early 40s. So it's not like he retired early or anything. And, you know, this company was owned for at least a generation in his family. So it must not have been easy or anything. But nevertheless, he did it. Frank and Helen hit it right off, like I said. And they married and they were happy together. Everybody says that it was a happy marriage and there was nothing more to it. It's not complicated. It just was what it was. Sadly, Frank died in the early 1970s. Helen therefore inherited or took ownership of their fortune. In 1973, Helen met Richard Bailey. He is described as kind of a ladies' man. Actually, gigolo is what I've read in articles for sure. And not so much that he really was, but that he was flirty and he could sweep any woman off his feet. And if there wasn't one woman, there was one lined up. So he was never really single and he spoiled them rotten. And just as you imagine what a ladies' man is, that's what he was. I don't know how that people really thought much of it or that he might have been a gold digger or anything like that. They just seemed to have a good time together. I don't know that it was anything super serious, like they never ended up moving in together, to my knowledge, but that's where they spent all their free time. Now, Helen and Frank, when he was alive, had shared two homes, one in their native Minnesota and another one in Florida. So they kind of split their time as us Northeastern birds know, like a lot of older people split their time between the Northeast, and a home in Florida for the winter. And that's kind of the same thing that happened here. So I know that Richard and her would go to Florida or they'd be around the area that they live. On February 17th of 1977, which we're coming up on an anniversary here, Helen had a physical scheduled at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I don't know if there was anything that led up to needing this particular physical or if it was routine, but it sounded like she was there for a while getting a whole bunch of tests done. But all seemed well at the Mayo Clinic, and she was given a clean bill of health. The doctor said, maybe you're a little overweight, maybe it would be a good idea to exercise and lose that little bit of weight, but otherwise she was totally healthy for a woman her age. After her appointment, she went shopping nearby, and she bought a couple of things before she was supposed to board a flight to O'Hare Airport, which is in Chicago. Now, she bought just several small items, not really significant, but the clerk remembers seeing and speaking with her and her saying that she had to get a flight and meet her handyman. And that is actually the last reported sighting of Helen that we have positively ever.
Wait, what?
Yes. So that's not where the story ends, but that's the last known sighting that we can confirm of her.
Okay.
So like I said, she was supposed to land in O'Hare. And the house hand was supposed to pick her up. And his name is Jack Matlick. Jack actually was hired a long time ago through Frank and Helen. When Frank died, he simply kind of picked up more of a regular schedule, if you will. He was there during the week, but he didn't live there. He didn't stay over. Doesn't sound like any inappropriate relationship. He just really kind of upped his game to help her around the house. So 2 weeks after that flight landed, the house hand, Matlick, he reported Helen missing. So naturally, police questioned him because they want to get the backstory and understand what's going on and investigate what happened to Helen. It's been 2 weeks. And he said he picked her up at the airport and he drove her home. And while they were home, she spent the next couple of days preparing for a flight to Florida. From what I understand, she was supposed to meet Richard in Florida. And that's a different story. Monday, he said he dropped her off at 7 a.m. with a little bit of luggage. And she's known to carry her whole life with her, as most females I know. And she had no reservation, which was odd, but he didn't ask questions.
Wait, she had no flight reservation?
Correct. And a small bag. So he does that. He goes home. And during those next 2 weeks, Matlick stayed at the house, which is really unusual because, like I said, he doesn't live there and he doesn't ever stay over. And he's married. And his wife's like, no, that's pretty unusual behavior for him to stay at the house like that. While he was at the house, during the investigation, it was uncovered that Matlick wrote several checks. Or I should say, Helen wrote several checks to Matlick totaling somewhere in the ballpark of $15,000. So police analyzed the checks because that's a little suspicious. And they determined it's not Helen's handwriting. So Matlick is like, oh, well, actually the story is that Helen injured her arm or her wrist and she couldn't write. So she used her opposite hand to write out these checks to Matlick. Simultaneously, Helen's brother flew in, I assume, to help with the investigation, answer any questions, do what he can, and he met at the house with Matlick. And between him and Matlick, they kind of searched the house trying to figure out what's going on, and they discovered diaries, which were Helen's, which had explicit, apparently, instructions to destroy the diaries if anything happened to her. So what did they do?
Oh my gosh. Tell me they didn't destroy them.
They burned the diaries. Wait a minute. Additionally, the police searched the home. They did a thorough job. And the vehicle, which Matlick would have used, which was Helen's, to drive her to and from the airport. The car was recently washed, waxed, vacuumed, including the trunk. And one room in the house actually had new paint and new carpet. And additional work being done. All really suspicious, right? So, police give him a lie detector. And I believe he received more than one lie detector. And he failed, although I've heard inconclusive in other resources, the lie detector test. Fortunately For him, I guess, he was really tight-lipped, and they really couldn't get any more information from Matlick. So the case kind of went cold at that point. They had nothing else they could do. So during all of this, when Helen was missing, we know she's worth a fortune. So a lot of people were having disagreements about who would handle Helen's money. So the courts did what they should do, and they appointed a guardian who started to look into other people in Helen's life. And I assume it was just to kind of understand what's going on with her money.
The dynamics and all that.
Yes, exactly. And he looked through all the stuff on Matlick, and he then started to look towards Richard Bailey. Now, if you remember, Richard is Helen's, I don't know if you want to call him boyfriend, companion, whatever. And when he went to call Richard, Richard was basically really tight-lipped. He actually got a lawyer that almost pretty much denied that or couldn't confirm that he and Helen even knew each other. Well, that makes one more suspicious, right? So he's looking into Richard, and what comes to light is he had a history of being into the horse market. Now, I really don't know much about it, so I don't know the proper lingo and stuff. But in essence, what I understand is he bought cheap horses and he sold them as winner horses, like purebred or whatever. Now, how Helen ties into this is ever since she met Frank, and I assume even before that, she had a deep love for animals. She donated a lot of money and a lot of time to animal charities and organizations. And as a matter of fact, I believe in her will, her money was set to go to her brother and or particular organizations that have to do with animals. So it seemed like her and Richard bonded over this. And what was discovered was that Richard was seemingly even conning Helen. So he was talking her into purchasing horses. And she would purchase these really cheap horses that were losers, what we know. And she thought they were purebred. And these horses were set to perform, and they didn't live up to how they were supposed to perform. And it's not for certain, but it's suspected that Helen kind of figured out what was going on with Richard. And this is kind of where it slowly trickles into theories. Now, as you can see, the first half of this story, you're thinking to yourself, this guy, this house hand, is so suspicious. He definitely has something to do with this. Well, then you have someone like Richard who is conning Helen, and he looks just as good for this.
Right.
As Matlick did. So it's suspected or thought that it could be possible that Richard somehow got rid of Helen because she was onto his game and perhaps would no longer be giving him money. Even with all this information, Melissa, nothing happens. Like, the case goes cold. Richard goes on to continue his con with other people. Matlick kind of goes into the shadows, and that's about it. So time went on. And in 1984, Helen was able to legally be declared dead. Now, we had another case where someone was declared legally dead, Michael Chambers, well before his time, legally. This was totally legal. It had been about 7 years since she disappeared, and her fortune was split between her brother and the animal organizations, as I told you about. So not that I think police stopped ever looking into things, but there just wasn't that much to look into unless new evidence were to come to light. So it wasn't until the early 2000s that someone actually came forward. And this guy claims to have been involved in Helen's murder. Now, he doesn't just claim to be involved in Helen's murder. He claims that roughly 9 or 10 other people were involved in the murder. And how he's connected is he worked alongside of a guy, and he was very much into the same kind of horse trading and conning as Richard was. And His name was Silas Jane, and he was kind of known for being involved in organized crime, and he's suspected to be involved in three other women's disappearances. So basically, this guy said that him, Bailey, Silas, and a whole bunch of other people basically beat her to death and incinerated her remains. Well, there's not that much evidence left, although he did have a ring, which is thought to be Helen's, but not completely sure. But he ended up dying, and anything that went along with that went with him as well. So, with all that being said, we still don't know what happened to Helen. We assume that foul play is likely involved, but her remains have never been recovered, although at some point a body was recovered that was similar in age and stature to Helen. And although DNA wasn't popular at the time, it was thought most likely that it wasn't hers. Now, here's the other piece to this story that's bizarre. When they had the body in their possession, they planned on comparing her dental records to Helen's. Well, the head ended up going missing. Now, to me, that's weird. However, it's kind of reported that when you send parts like that, I guess, out for DNA testing, things like this do happen. So it wasn't looked at as if it was totally abnormal. But still, I kind of think it is. Like, how do you lose a head? I just don't know.
Yeah, that's a little bizarre.
So eventually, with the suspicions on Richard, the police were able to charge Richard with a lot of crimes involving his conning and his illegal activity in the horse arena. And I believe they also charged him with something along the lines of conspiracy to commit murder or something, and they were able to send him to prison. But it's not probably the closure that people really wanted, because he didn't go to prison for murder, and he eventually did get out even though he was very old. And we still don't know exactly what happened to Helen, because he's never reported that he had anything to do with her disappearance. Matlick eventually died. And that's it. We still don't know what happened to Helen after she left the Mayo Clinic that day in 1977. So, this is the first case that I can think of off the top of my head where, as I'm going through theories, it would be very unlikely for us to be sitting here having a conversation about died by suicide or leaving your life. Although, you probably at least could make a case for leaving your life.
Leaving your life. Yeah. So here's the thing. I want to back up for 1 second about her going to the airport. We're in a pre-9/11 world, obviously.
Yes. Yep.
Where you could just walk up to an airline, like, counter and get on a flight.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure you could probably even hand your ticket to someone.
And then second of all, you said that she didn't have a lot of luggage. Well, if they had a house in Florida, it wouldn't matter. She wouldn't need a lot of luggage.
That's true. However, her friends and acquaintances all say that she was the type of person that always carried a lot of luggage. So while plausible, not quite likely.
Okay.
But yes, that's a good point. I mean, she would have money. She would be able to walk right into the airport and just buy a ticket.
Now, I don't think she left her life, because she's a millionaire, and unless she hid money away. But, I mean, were there two decisive theories? Like, one is, does Richard die, and one is the guy that came forward and said he murdered her? Are they together? And then what about the handyman?
I inserted the possible leave your life or died by suicide, which I don't read about anywhere. There is Richard is involved or Matlick is involved. And while I thought to myself, why couldn't they both be involved? I haven't really seen any theories merging the two. So that's pretty much what the theories are. Very few. But you're like, oh gosh, well, this should be a no-brainer. This is easy. But then you look at these two guys and they're both awful.
Yeah, they both are awful. And my only hesitation with either of them, truthfully, is I would assume they did it for money. what is the motive, so to speak? Because let's go through both of them. The handyman guy.
Yep.
Right? He wouldn't get any money after she died.
No, but he wrote some checks seemingly to himself. He says Helen did it, but let's be real. He likely did it. And it equaled $15,000. I don't know what the equivalent today would be. I actually am curious about that.
What year was it in?
77, which is the equivalent
of 65 grand.
So that's quite a bit of money.
Yeah, but it's not enough.
That he thought he could get away with.
Okay, so what it really comes down to is two men in her life were conning her, right?
Well, at the very end, because there's no evidence that I've heard that Matt Lick had conned her before that.
So he only wrote the checks after she was deceased?
Yeah. Well, we don't know that she was deceased at that point.
Okay, after she went missing?
Yes. So he was alone in the house for 2 weeks. And a couple of other things about that. We obviously know that he stayed there. Unusual. We know that rooms and a car was finished and redone. Another thing was, Helen is reported to be very social. Although she lived alone and she was comfortable with it, when she supposedly came home from O'Hare Airport, those 4 days and the subsequent 2 weeks that she was missing, people came to the house or called looking for her, and Matt Lick said that she was not around. And no one in Florida heard from her as if she flew down there to her other home. So no one had heard from her, let alone see her. And Matt Lick is the one that intervened on these people. So take that for what it's worth as well.
Gosh.
So we have Matt Lick and a potential motive, which I don't know, like, would I kill someone for $69,000 or $64,000, whatever it is? No. But someone different might see that as a way to pay off a mortgage or to buy a new sports car or something like that. So someone with not so high standards for human life might do that. But that would mean that all the years that he worked for Helen, he didn't give two stinks about her.
Okay, so are we thinking that if he was the one that did it, he did it during those 4 days?
Well, since there is no technical reservation that could be found for the Florida trip, it's not just 4 days. He had 2 weeks. But I suspect that if he killed her, he didn't drive far to dispose of the body because every time or most of the times that someone came to the house or called, Matt Lick was there. It's not like he took a 2-day road trip to Canada.
Yes, but they're also not showing up at 11 p.m.
True, but how far are you going to get in one night?
6 hours away.
Okay, so plausible. So your search area is vast. But it's not like he took a 2-week road trip to go to the northernmost part of Canada and
right,
come back.
Right, right. Okay, so if we think it's him, it happened then, and he was just going to steal the money, and then she disappeared, and that was the end of it.
Yes, and I don't know if you want to give much thought to this either, because now that you mention it, her brother came and was okay with burning some information. So, and he is actually the one that received the money.
That's fair, however, it's also 1977, and we don't know what we know now about true crime.
Yep.
So I chalk that up to him just following her wishes, although I wish he didn't do it.
And I'm actually inclined to agree with you. She could have written anything that would have at least called into question maybe her reputation or... And it could... I'm not insinuating that she had this alternate life by any means, but sometimes we're just scared about what people will think about us and our innermost thoughts. So.
Exactly. So, what, and then let's talk about the other guy.
Okay. So we have Richard Bailey, the gigolo boyfriend. So he meets her and he's already kind of got a history of conning women, or at bare minimum, he's completely ingenuine, right?
And, oh, I mean, he's been involved in crime, criminal enterprises.
Yes, and he's involved with someone that is deeply involved in racketeering and gambling, and you might even look at him like a mob boss or something. So if he's got debts to pay and Helen is not selling him or paying for horses anymore, maybe he needs to do this to save his own neck.
But what does killing her do? Like, it's not like...
Well, maybe she was going to expose him and send him to prison. Or destroy his quote-unquote business.
I'm just saying, it wouldn't help him on his debts because he's not going to get anything with her dead. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe he was threatening her for money and she was threatening to expose him.
But don't forget, if he did it, he wasn't the one that literally placed his hands on her, most likely because he was in Florida.
That's true.
So I'm inclined to think it's probably not an accident. I would think that he wanted to silence her because she would have sent him to prison. She had money. She had power. She had literally been conned. And she had her horses appraised for their value and discovered, oh, no, he's selling you dud horses. And
I know. So are we 100% sure he was in Florida?
Yeah, he was down at the house waiting to, quote unquote, meet Helen. But then if you consider that to be true, then...
It's not him.
Well, that's not true because she didn't have a reservation to go to Florida. So did he just get lucky? And how would Matlick have had the same story that she was about to go to Florida and she just happens to not have luggage or a reservation to go? Do you know what I'm saying here? There's stories like...
Yeah, I don't...
Almost...
Corroborate each other's.
Exactly.
And there's no theory of them working together.
No. Mm-mm.
Well, where do you land?
I'm more inclined to think that Richard had something to do with it because he was involved in illegal activity. He was involved with someone who had experience, or at least is linked to other disappearances of women. So he's in the right circle for it. Matlick had some really funky behavior, but as far as I know, he had no criminal activity on his record.
See, I'm the other way.
Do you think so? Okay.
I think Matlick is involved because he had the means and the opportunity.
Yep.
I don't know what the motive is, but he was fully capable of doing something. I mean, she trusted him. He was in her house when she was alone. He drove her car.
Yep.
So he had no... And she was, at this point, not trusting Richard.
That's true. But if she had been angry or something with Richard, I mean, she wouldn't have suspected if some quote-unquote hitman were to approach her.
But if Matlick was there, how'd they get in?
We don't even know that she made it all the way home. Her luggage was found there with luggage tags and stuff, but it's not really a guarantee that he didn't pick her up at the airport and something sinister happened on the way home.
Who, Matlick?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But although, personally, I do believe that she made it home because why repaint a room? Why rip up carpeting? Why clean your car? Because, see, then I go to Matlick because...
Yeah, that's where I am.
If you've done all that and then you clean the car, that would indicate that something happened in the house and you took the body in the car.
That's exactly what I would go to.
But what do you make of this guy that came forward in the 2000s saying he was involved with like 10 or 11 other people? And he might have a ring that was hers.
Well, first of all, they have to authenticate that. Second of all, I'm glad that this is a prime example of I Know What You Did Last Summer. And they all made this freaking pact about how we're not going to tell anyone anything.
Well, but they're all criminal. I mean, would it be that hard to have them shut their mouth?
No, but I don't think... My question would be, did he get a lighter sentence due to coming forward for... So
he wasn't arrested. He wasn't arrested.
Silas Jane... Right, which we're talking about.
Yes.
was convicted in 1973 for conspiracy of murder for George Jane, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was true, unless he had more information. And, like, police obviously have not moved that forward.
Well, because all they have is the word of someone and a ring that people identify that could be hers.
Right, but where is the body?
Well, if this guy that came forward is right, she would have been incinerated 20, 30 years ago from that point that he confessed, not today.
My guess is law enforcement tried to corroborate that and couldn't.
Well, yeah, I would agree.
So I'm still on Malik.
I lean more towards Richard Bailey.
I know, and we don't have to agree.
I know, but when I start thinking about that strange behavior in the house...
I just have to say this: the simplest answer is probably the answer, and whoever had the means...
Oh, that's what I say.
I know. And he had the means and the opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, if that's true, he's gone. He passed away, and we will never know unless someone comes across her remains one day, which at this point, I don't know... scientifically, how identifiable remains would be.
You know what's really creepy when you say it like that?
What?
How many remains do you think are out in the world right now?
A very depressing amount.
Right? Like, just... this is going to sound very crass, but just like dead bodies everywhere.
I've actually thought the same thing, because most of the time in these big cases eventually, you know, that receive a lot of attention, a body is found, and it leads you to think that it's a lot harder to hide a body. But in my opinion, if you're willing to make the effort, and I mean that in no positive way at all, but if you're willing to make an effort, you can actually really dispose of a body. It would just be difficult.
And on that note...
don't worry, I've got nothing to contribute beyond just how scary all those things seem.
Yes, I agree. All right, so I end up on Matt. Like, he had the motive. I think he picked her up at the airport, and he did bring her home, and likely something happened at home, whether it be he wrote the first check and she caught him, or whatever it might be, and then it escalated. He killed her, put her in his car, and drove her somewhere.
That's a decent theory.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I think it's a good theory. I'm going to land on Richard being so involved in criminal activity and stuff. I'm sure, if I can venture a guess, that our listeners are going to be split down the middle, too.
Okay, well, tell us what you think, because we want to know.
Yes.
We want to know who's right.
Yes, and thank you so much to Christina, Mindy, and Wendy for asking us to do this case, because honestly, when I started to read it, like I said, I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. But no, it leaves me scratching my head, so thanks, guys.
And we ended up in different places, so...
yep.
All right, we'll see you next week with a whole new case.
All right, guys. Bye. Information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.